Anyway, we've got Dan Clayton on the other line, and Dan is an awesome writer and another one of our Salt City Hoops featured experts, if you will. Dan, are you there?
Yeah. Hey guys, how you doing? By the way, you don't envy David Locke. What about a guy who has to do it in his second language?
Right? Okay, you're right. You know what? You're right. I don't envy you or Nicole Hernandez or whoever. I don't. Yeah.
Yeah. Dan Clayton. Well, by the way,
I don't have to do anything anymore but watch him. So yeah. You know, I'm having fun.
Dan, by the way, if you don't know, was a former Spanish language radio voice of the Utah Jazz, or I guess color commentator. Is that right, Dan? Or you switched off?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. You can. Whatever.
You did everything.
I was a radio guy in Spanish for the Utah Jazz, and now I'm just a guy in whatever language.
You're not just a guy. You're a Salt City Hoops featured expert. We've been over this.
Okay.
Anyway.
Sure, I'll take it.
I wanted to get your opinion on a bunch of stuff. First of all, you wrote an awesome Rudy Gobert article this week, and then you also looked at him, I believe, either last week or 2 weeks ago. First of all, you wrote and did a video compilation of his assists this year, which I think is an underrated part of Rudy Gobert's game. He's had 42 assists thus far this year and has shown kind of a nimble passing element that I don't know that I knew that he had. I mean, what have you seen from Rudy Gobert as far as passing the ball goes this year?
Well, you know, it's interesting because for the first 20 games or so, 25 games, he was getting a lot of assists, but it was basically all the same thing. It was that play that the Jazz have all their big men do a lot when a particular play, when the first option isn't there or whatever, one option is to look back to the weak side guard who comes up for a little handoff, and then you screen him at the same time, and they take the jumper, and that accounted for a bunch of Rudy's assists. Well, right about that same time in mid-December when he started playing a bunch more, probably corresponding with the Favors injury, but also just, you know, as Favors started to see more minutes and get more comfortable on the floor, all of a sudden we were seeing a mixed bag. We were seeing some kickouts, even some drive-and-kick stuff, which coming from a 7'1", 7'2" guy is pretty amazing. And we were seeing some really nice interior pocket passing and wraparound passes. So I think that's the exciting thing to me because, you know, it's not that – If your coach only asks you to make one kind of pass, that's not that difficult to do, although I should be careful there because he also has twice as many passes as Enes Kanter, who's played more minutes than him on the season. but it's the fact that we're starting to see a little bit of vision displayed by Rudy, and that he's not just doing one thing and making one play, but he's really starting to learn the offense.
Have you come up with a solid nickname for that? I mean, I know you suggested two of them in your article. Have you come up with the answer? Is it the Notre Dame or the Giving Tree?
I know my vote.
I like Notre Dame.
Yep.
Only because it's a little derivative of Jody Genesee's Stifle Tower. It's like we're keeping it on the Parisian sightseeing theme, and even though he's not from Paris, but you know whatever. I think it still evokes the invokes the. Image of wandering around France with your camera around your neck and your socks and sandals, which is kind of what I think Jody was going for.
Are you trying to tell me there's parts of France that aren't Paris?
Yeah, I know, it's weird. I don't know if they really teach a lot of that in American schools, but kind of fun.
It's my understanding that Argentina's in Europe as well. I'm partial to the Giving Tree, by the way. I'm just pro Shel Silverstein in every possible situation, and I guess this is one of them.
Okay, all right. Well, the way Andy Bailey put it the other day was basically the Notre Dame is the act. So he tweeted out the other day, "Hey, look, it's another Notre Dame from the Giving Tree." So okay. You know, we can make it work for everybody. Be diplomatic about it.
As far as Gobert's nickname himself, anything but the Stifle Tower just personally bugs me. It's got to be the Stifle Tower. I know the credit's got to go to Jody on that one, but that like it's perfect. There couldn't be any either that or their Gobert report. That for me,
right.
as his personal overall nickname. I love that we've spent this long on this. By the way, here's my question for you, Dan. Do you think that there is more room for his improvement in this area? And yes or no, and if kind of explain your answer. Tell me your thoughts about that, Dan.
Oh, sure. I think what the, you know, December 17th through now video tells us compared to the, you know, the first 20 or so assists of his season is that, you know, he's a guy who you can sit down with and say, okay, you seem to get, you know, how this particular play works. Now we're going to try the next thing. you know, now we're going to advance the repertoire along. He's obviously a hungry guy. Everything we hear from, you know, from people that spend time around the Jazz is that he wants to get better. He's coachable. I think, for sure. I think what we're seeing around the basket is, you know, there's probably not that much more you want a guy who's 7-1 doing. Like, at a certain point, you want him to focus as well on adding that muscle mass so that he can just finish things that close in. But I think that there's a whole, there's a whole development process with his passing that I think will come with time. I think he's already kind of shattering the, the best you can hope for him on offense is playing him on the back line like Tyson Chandler. I think he's showing us that he might have a little bit more to him mentally than just, you know, I'll stand back here and if the defense pressures you, you can just lob it to me.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the defense, which I'm going to transition to briefly here. I don't know if you were listening to it, and surely many of our listeners were last night on the broadcast. Matt Harpring picked Mr. Gobert as his defensive player of the year, not for the Jazz, but for the league, which to me was a pretty funny pick just because, I mean, it's obviously a homer pick. Rudy's playing like 21 and a half minutes per game, which is like, it's very, very hard to, and he's playing for a team that's still in the bottom 10 in defensive efficiency in the league and so on and so forth, all those caveats. Here's my question, though, is how actually far away is he from the point where he's going to be in that conversation yearly? Like, are we going to, or what would he have to do this year to enter the fringes of that? He can never win, but to enter the fringes of that conversation this year.
Yeah, well, I think the biggest thing with any of those awards is if you look historically at who wins the postseason awards in the NBA, and I've actually done this before for Salt City Hoops. I think it was for Salt City Hoops. Pretty much the only award you can win and not be on a playoff team is Rookie of the Year. Everything else is kind of this prerequisite, but like, you know, you were most improved, but your team didn't go anywhere. Okay, that's cool because there are 8 other guys we could give most improved to. So I think that's the biggest thing is he'll start to be a contender for that type of attention and that type of hardware once the Jazz are, you know, legitimate again, once the Jazz are relevant in the playoff discussion.
We've got Dan
Quick. But as far as, like, what does he have to do, to solidify that impact, I don't think that much. I think he's already gotten as much buzz in the last 30 days as just about any NBA player. I mean, it's ridiculous how much he's getting talked about, not just by the Utah media, but by national people, too.
Yeah, sorry to cut you off there, Dan. I just wanted to let our listeners know you're listening to Dan Clayton of Salt City Hoops on with us. I'm curious because you're right that he has had this sort of, national notoriety, and it's been really impressive. I wanted to get your thoughts on the move, kind of the surprising move to both of us, that the Jazz chose to start Dante Exum in tonight's game over a healthy Trey Burke. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, like right off the bat, I was surprised. It was a little weird because it's not like Trey has been playing poorly lately. I mean, you know, the last 2 games he's had some clunkers, but so pretty much the entire roster. Before that he had 6 straight games with 15 points or more. So when he made the comment today that he understands that the coach has to hold him accountable, I was thinking, you know, hold you accountable for what? He has had a couple of rough games. But it's not like Dante Exum has played better, and I think I'm pretty well established as a Dante Exum fan club president, or you know, at least like treasurer or something. I don't know. we haven't had the yearly officer elections yet, but I mean, like I'm pretty much on the record as being a Dante guy. But he has played. He has been in a really big funk, and maybe what this tells us and what we're seeing as a result tonight with the Jazz in Milwaukee is that Quinn Snyder's an evil genius and this was all part of his master plan, because maybe all Dante needed to shake out of that funk was a little bit of confidence from his coach to say, hey, go out there and get me 15 points and a couple of dimes.
I was going to ask, is this the Exum game? Are we watching it? Or
really good question, yeah. For those who don't know, I've been talking for a long time about when we're going to have that Exum game where we start to see flashes and we go, oh, Exum has arrived. I guess for me, I pictured the Exum game a little differently. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm impressed by his 15 points on 5 3-pointers at this stage of the game. I guess for me, what I thought we would see, the game that I thought would make us all fangirl out and go crazy over the Australian rookie, was the game where he started to really use his tools a little bit more and get to the basket and turn on the burners and lose guys in the dust. But yeah, don't get me wrong, I'm thrilled, you know, to see him have what I think is at this point a career night. And between the three of us, he's probably my front runner for that next game ball at this point. If the Jazz,
oh man,
five-point lead.
It is indeed, by the way, his career high with 15 points, all of them on 3-point shots tonight. He's made 5, if you can do the math. But I agree with you, Dan, that I'd like to see a little bit more variety in his offensive game in order to give him that Exum game title. I'm curious about your thoughts on the end of the roster. I mean, so the Jazz have to make this decision on both Elijah Millsap and Elliot Williams this week. Wanted to know your thoughts on whether or not you think the Jazz should keep those guys, whether they will keep those guys, whether the flexibility is worth it as the Jazz take an 8-point lead in Milwaukee. Milwaukee timeout.
Yeah, good question. I think if Rodney Hood and Alec Burks were healthy, you know, this would be a wow. That was a great shot by Hayward. Sorry, I'm apparently a few seconds behind you.
Yep.
But he's taken over. So at any rate, you know, the health issues make this, in my mind, a little bit of a no-brainer. I think otherwise you'd have some serious debate because the Jazz have wanted to use those last spots as a chance to kick the tires on some guys and you know, cycle guys in and out so that they can find those diamonds in the rough and those, you know, do the Popovich thing and pull some studs off the NBA scrap heap. But I think just with the health situation, I'm not sure that they can really afford, frankly, to, you know, I mean, like, Millsap, I almost called him Paul Millsap. Elijah Millsap is playing a lot of minutes for this team right now. So, you know, just from a continuity perspective, if you tell him thanks for your 20 days of service and you bring someone else in and you expect them to play 15 or 20 minutes a night, that's definitely going to have an impact on the team. Probably less so with Elliot Williams, but in my mind, I'd probably keep both of them. Now, maybe that's why I'm not Dennis Lindsay, and Dennis Lindsay is Dennis Lindsay. But I just think health-wise, you know, these guys have had nice moments. Elliot Williams with double figures last night, and then Elijah, obviously, with a lot of great defensive play. That some of it shows up in the stat sheet and some of it doesn't.
What happened to Ian Clark, by the way? Like, is that a thing anymore? Does he – because that's the part that I've been wondering about. Like, we're looking at all these stop gaps, essentially, and there's been this guy who's been on the roster the entire year.
Yeah.
I think maybe a lot of it is that he's too small to play three. Like, he really can't play any three. At least not viably for long periods.
I don't think he can play two, quite
He can frankly. Barely play two, I was going to say. Like, he's getting abused by certain twos as well, and he just hasn't shot the ball well enough to make up for any of that on the other end. It's a little unfortunate for him that his play has been at a level where clearly this is a concern for the Jazz wing depth, and they've gotten enormously unlucky with their top two guys at a single position going down for much of the year. And instead of going to the guy who's been on their roster all year long, they're looking for D-leaguers and 10-day contracts and things like that instead of him. Is this probably the last we're seeing of Ian Clark then, do you think?
You know, I've gotten some heat for this, actually, because I know that Ian Clark is a guy that a lot of fans like, and I like him too. I've no issues with Ian Clark, the person or even the player. I just think that as the NBA game is concerned, he's a little bit without identity. You know, his calling card was always that he could make shots, and he's not doing that in the NBA. So he's basically either a shot maker who doesn't make shots, or he's a facilitator who doesn't really facilitate. And to be honest, like that's fine if that's what he is, and he's just your 13th man. But that makes me wonder a little bit why the Jazz guaranteed his contract if it's January and they're relying this heavily on the Elijah Millsaps and Elliot Williams of the world. It was only, you know, a couple months ago really that they said, sure, you know, take $800,000 on us, because that could be now the spot that was being used for flexibility and for trying guys out. But instead we committed that money and that roster spot to a guy who, like I say, I'm just not sure how he fits in the NBA.
Yeah.
Unless he starts knocking down jumpers, we'll see.
I mean, wasn't it the 31st, though? July 31st that they had to make that decision.
No, yeah, I mean, I guess you're right. I'm oversimplifying when I say a couple months. I think it was sometime in August for some reason with his guarantee date. It was later than most of the free agent, you know, hubbub. Right. So you're right, and I should be fair to Ian, but just obviously he's not a big part of the plan, and I kind of think the same thing honestly about, like, you know, poor Jeremy Evans, who a year ago was a rotation player, you know, finally had grabbed a rotation spot, and now, you know, he sees guys going in and out with injury, and Derek Favors misses a game due to personal issues, and, you know, Jeremy's probably thinking, okay, tonight I'm going to get my shot, and Quinn instead spreads the minutes across three guys, which is, don't get me wrong, probably the right thing to do, but those are just a couple of guys when you think about Jeremy and Ian, who are probably, you know, wondering if their coach remembers that they're there. But again, it's all for reasons that I can understand from a basketball perspective.
Yeah, Andy and I were actually just talking about that with each other on one of the breaks here, about how the Jazz rotation has only been eight men tonight, and a big part of that is the fact that they're only going with three bigs rather than four, and with one big out in Derek Favors, they've just kind of chosen to distribute those minutes more evenly among the rest of them rather than to go to somebody like Jeremy Evans. And I think he's unrestricted after this season, right? Because he's been in the league 7 years now? Yep. Am I mistaken? Yeah,
he's unrestricted, and you're right. Three bigs, three wings, two point guards. So, by the way, that's an okay way to play. I mean, that's a smart way to do it. Although, you know, when you're in a season that maybe getting a look at some guys would make a good difference too. We might have never mind. I thought we had an Ooch Luke moment. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I think you're right. I think eight deep might be what we see until this team is whole again.
Yeah, no, that's fair. So, want to let you get to watching the end of this Jazz game. Jazz are currently up 101-96 with about a minute 40 left to go. We'll let you go and go around the NBA just for a second before the game ends. Dan, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Have a good one.